Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today I'm joined by Mike Robinson, and we're going to be talking about sustainability in retailing and making retailing more efficient and more sustainable. Just delighted to have Mike on the podcast today. Hey, Mike, welcome to the podcast. Nice to see you.
Thanks, Ted. Very happy to be here.
And where are you sitting as we speak?
Yeah, I am in my house in San Francisco, where I've lived for the better part of the last 23, 24 years.
One of my favorite, very, very favorite cities. How great. And what's on your docket? Here it is, a Monday morning. What's on your docket today or this week?
Well, as with many of us, it's a bit of recovery from the weekend, which was a bit of DIY stuff for Mike Robinson around the house. I own an older home, so I had a bunch of things to do and got some cuts and bruises from doing that. But it was start to understand how the business week is starting to shape up, get a cup of coffee and try to get moving and try to catch up with the world that continues to seem to move on, regardless of how much I check in with it during the weekend.
Yeah, I know. I think we all have Monday-itis. Yeah. It's just a tough day, and you just have to just take some breaths and just sort of get, like you said, sort of get into the groove. How did you? I framed you up in the intro as an expert on sustainable retailing. Is that a reasonable explanation of sort of the top level of the elevator pitch of what you do?
Yeah, I believe I'm transforming into that. Right. I didn't start out that way. Right. It wasn't necessarily the way that things began. Right. And we can go into the origin story of Mike Robinson and my time in retail, but it's where I'm at now. Right. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in my career trying to figure out how to get people to buy things that they didn't need. And I probably will never change that part of me. I am a shameless capitalist retailer. I think that's important to keep the engines of capitalism moving forward. But I don't mind changing the patterns in terms of how they consume. And one of those patterns is how they think about sustainability, right? And, where I'm focused right now is on the fulfillment side, but I've got thoughts and perspectives as it relates to product, product design, branding, et cetera. And it's something that, as I sit here in my late 50s, I didn't see myself as an eco warrior, but yeah. All of a sudden I think I'm becoming one.
Yeah. How interesting. Well, how did you get started? Let's go back in your career and born and raised in California.
Yeah, I actually grew up in Pennsylvania. I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania in a very, my friends refer to it as Pennsyltucky because it's rather rural and it's a very small town. It's 3,500 people. It's it's God's country. It was a great place to grow up in small town America. I went to school in Pennsylvania at Penn State. I'm a proud Nittany Lion, even though we had a bit of difficulty this past weekend with Ohio State in our football program, still a proud alumni. And then started working in the pharmaceutical industry in Philadelphia, which then took me out to California and Southern California first, where I was part of an acquisition that we had done of the Mylanta brand of antacids. They asked me to go out and help understand how the manufacturing was done to bring the plant back to the East Coast. And when I found out that it was time to move, I didn't want to move. And I wanted to stay in California and jumped into consulting at that point. And my career is very varied and a bit of a zigzag, but it was always based on learning something new. And I went into consulting to learn how to be a consultant and how to provide advice and how to provide perspective and how to be a better business person, because I started to understand it from an industry perspective. I wanted to understand it from a consultant and advice perspective. I did that for the better part of a decade or so, and then left big consulting to move into small consulting at the turn of the century when we were just getting into digital retail and starting to understand what it meant for retailers to sell direct to consumers when they didn't have to come into their stores.
And so let's pause just for a second. This notion of digital retail, that's all the online shopping that's going on?
Absolutely. And that's, that's how most of us, probably start our journeys in some way, shape or form. I was in the early stage of trying to help, large companies figure out what it meant to have a digital channel, what it meant to have an e-commerce channel. Mm-hmm. And that really was the bug that bit me, that made me want to become a retailer. because I started to understand the immediacy of value creation associated with helping somebody in a customer experience and a customer journey to actually get to a point of sale. And it was also the thing that was most familiar to me because I was doing my own shopping. And so I could understand things that were good and things that were bad.
Has this been the focus of your career then, digital retail then?
Once I found it, I never let go, right? So the better part of the last 25 years have really been focused on digital retail.
What do you think that, Mike, what do you think the percentage is of retail now that is digital? Is that a very naive question, I suppose?
No, it's a great question because I think we keep seeing these growths through leaps and bounds, especially during the pandemic when everybody was stuck at home and stuff was brought to us. And so there was a massive shift in the adoption curve, but it's still, it's still approaching, 25 to 30% of total retail. I mean, there's still a predominant amount is still done in stores, but the journey can happen. It can start, the research can start, how I actually purchase can start online, but I go pick up in a store from a fulfillment standpoint. That there's lots of ways as the omnichannel nature of retail has taken over the last 10 to 15 years, as mobile has become much more adopted, as everybody had a phone in their hands and they could, get immediate gratification. And obviously the growth of Amazon, right? It caused us to believe that, anything that I wanted today, I could have tomorrow. And so, but it's still that 25 to 30% is about where we normalize to. And there are some industries and some variants of retail that are still in the 10 to 15%. I mean, if you buy a car, you don't buy it online. Some people do, but many people still walk into a dealership. It continues to grow as the adoption and also just the convenience of it.
Where do you think it'll settle out? That you put on your crystal ball and you said it's at 25 to 30%. Now it's normalized sort of at this point at post pandemic, I suppose. But what do you think in 10, 15 years, you think we'll be even higher?
I think we'll get to 50-50, right? I think it's going to be a change in generations as well. I mean, that there's an entire, that there's at least a generation and a half that's all they've known, right? And there's a generation and a half that have kind of adopted to it or adapted to it. I think 50-50 is going to be that tipping point in the next 10 years or so. And also it's just, what does it mean to have, to buy online? I mean, right now everybody is having things delivered to them in some way, shape or form, whether it be, takeout or whether it be groceries or whether it be, everything that they buy in a retail setting, or as I mentioned before, having a car delivered to you. So people continue to adopt the format to satisfy their consumption needs.
And what is more sustainable, do you think? Is it more sustainable for folks to go into a store as we did when we were kids? Or is it more sustainable to buy online and have Amazon roll their truck and bring you a product?
It's a really great question. I think sustainability comes from understanding better what I need and not what I want, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a shift in getting to people. I think many people have adopted e-commerce as I'm going to use my home as the virtual try-on location. I'm going to get multiple, dresses or multiple pairs of shoes or multiple pairs of jeans because I've made returns really easy and really cheap or free. There's nothing good about that, right? And so in that situation, it would have been much better for me to drive to a store instead of have all of that stuff brought to me and then me to send 90% of it back. But I don't think people think that way, right? Right. I think it's convenience that drives it. I'm hoping that conscious consumption becomes part of the conversation for people as we move forward.
Interesting. I moved from the mountains of Colorado years ago to Los Angeles to be the director of energy efficiency for the city of Los Angeles. And I really paused because I thought of Los Angeles as the land of conspicuous consumption. Right. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. You've already alluded to it a couple of times in this discussion is, this conscious consumption. It's like, what do people really need versus, if they're just shopping online and they see something, do they just... I mean, the online shopping is merciless, right? I mean, it's constantly teasing you with the things that you don't really need it, but boy, you kind of want it, right?
Yeah. No, I I fall prey to it myself, right? I mean, I, you know, as I tell people, I find probably 90% of new product discovery is happening for me on Instagram, right? As I'm just shamelessly scrolling through my Instagram feed, I see a product that sounds really interesting. They make it really easy, and I decide to try it. Yeah. The question is, do I come back and buy it a second time, right? Or is it, or am I a one and done? Because that's really how they're acquiring customers on that. I don't know where this is going to go. I think people's consciousness is elevating. I think as we go through it, I think sustainability has also taken on a little bit of a negative phrase to it in some way, shape, or form. You know, as there's been the greenwashing over time, as people have you know, thought they were doing something right, but they really weren't doing anything good. You know, if you commit to, you know, spend a little bit more, I'll plant a tree in your name. The reality is you find out those trees were never planted and you know, and the carbon offsets, which I'm not a fan of carbon offsets. I'm about carbon avoidance, right? How do you get it right the first time so you never create the carbon in the first place? I think a lot of that comes from consumer choice and also just thinking about the problem differently, which is, you know, where I spend most of my time.
Right. Well, how are people then becoming aware, getting awareness around in this area, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in front of us. I don't think there's a large corporation in America that isn't promoting some level of commitment around carbon neutrality, right? Trying to get there by 2030 or 2050, which are the two large projections. You see airlines doing it. You see Amazon doing it themselves. You see lots of companies. I mean, there are Honda just came out and said, you know, I mean, the car you buy today will end up, you know, becoming the car that you buy tomorrow, right? Because we'll take everything from it and recycle it. Yeah. They're finding ways of being able to do it. I think what's going to happen is that there's going to have to be a change in the consumer's mindset to say, I'm going to support those brands. I'm going to get behind those brands that actually say, you know, thinking in a sustainable manner, than thinking in a conservation manner is something that I want to invest in, right? And I want to vote with my wallet. I think many of the brands are testing it right now to be able to do it, but it has to be authentic, right? Right, which is why I go against the, which is why I struggle with the offset. I want to get to avoidance more than anything else on the carbon side.
You've written about this, the sustainability gap, I think you called it, between retail brands and investors and consumers. Dig a little bit deeper into that.
I think it is that changing mindset, right? It's that changing mindset that many consumers are saying, you know, loudly, right? That if you find a way to give me a product that is sustainably sourced, if you can get it to me in a sustainable manner, if you practice sustainable business practices, you know, I'm willing to vote with my wallet. But many of the, at least on the retailer side, haven't figured out how to take advantage of that, right? How to actually answer the bell when the consumer is asking for it. They're giving all the signals, right? That they're saying, I'm, you know, like in the space I am in the fulfillment spaces, they're saying, look, I get a lot of packages. I'm willing to wait longer if you can get it to me in a eco-friendly pattern, right? And I'm actually willing to wait longer if you can get it to me on a specific date, because then I've got convenience associated with it, right? So if you narrow the variability on the consumer side, they're saying, and if you can promise that it'll be done in a more sustainable manner, that they're saying, I'm raising my hand in another article I wrote that it doesn't need to be fast, right? Yeah. It just needs to be consistent. And that's what they're really driving towards.
Who would be an example of that or comes to mind?
Well, I mean, the next time you shop on Amazon, watch for it, right? Right. That they're saying, you know, you have multiple choices, you know, you can pick the fastest option, or you can pick the option that we're going to tell you that we're going to deliver everything that you've ordered on, or that we are already headed to your neighborhood to be able to do that, or that we'll do it in a way that will take less boxes as well. I mean, that they're actually working with many of their suppliers to figure out how they don't have to overpack the boxes, right? They just take the manufacturer's package, stick a label on it, and send it to you, right? Instead of what they do now, every time you get an Amazon box, it's like a Russian nested doll, right? Right. You're opening it up to find another box, to find some packaging material to be able to get to the item that you've had. But they're in their fulfillment, in their brand promise, they're making it and saying, look, I can commit to you on time. I can commit to you value, and I can tell you that I'm going to do it in a more sustainable manner.
That's pretty cool. So has Amazon, in your view, been a positive in this space, or sort of a leader, obviously cutting edge leader? Are they Amazon, everybody else? What's your view?
No, it's they're always first, right? Mm-hmm. They're always there first, and they always drive perception before anyone else does, right? You know, I mean, Amazon Prime is a perfect example of a shipping program that was supposed to be free and fast. So you pay $99 and you get it the next day. Well, now you're paying $129 and you're getting it whenever they choose to get it to you, right? But you've adopted the change in their business practices because you feel like you're getting significant value because they've added other value drivers to it as well. I was very surprised that they weren't here about 2 years ago. They got here about a year ago, and in terms of really talking about in their fulfillment conversation how they're going to be much more sustainable in what they in how they bring you the product that you want. And they're enlisting you as a consumer in making those choices. And so they're constantly learning about this. So I think they're going to drive behavior just like they drove behavior on free and fast, that they're going to drive behavior around, you know, green and consistent.
You mentioned the greening or the delivery time, and that a consumer can they right now choose a slower time and have the less packaging come to your door?
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to go. Right. Right. Okay. I think it's going to be that kind of explicit social contract between the consumer and the retailer to say, you know, free means something fun. And I recently had an article published on this as well. Free is going to mean something different, you know, if you agree to allow me to have a little bit more time to find a way that things can be delivered to you in a more sustainable manner, maybe with less packaging as well, even though that's not a space I'm in, I will allow that to be the free option. If you need it faster, I'm going to charge you for it, right? Because there's a cost, that there needs to be a cost to you because there's a cost to me as a business provider.
Well, now, Mike, you've got the shipping of the product, and we've talked about the timing of that and the packaging, how many boxes, like you said, it's just maddening. Everybody's getting all this cardboard in the mail. But then what about the products themselves? Is Amazon doing anything to rate the sustainability of the actual products that they're selling?
I haven't seen that yet. Right. Yeah, I do think it's going to come, right? I mean, I think people are going to look for those products. And I think what they did is they started where they really operate best, and that's at the fulfillment, you know, moving product very quickly, right? They will go upstream. And I think you'll see it in product reviews. I think the nature of product reviews will change over time, right? Right, in terms of how do you get a green, sustainable stamp associated with the product that you have, and how is it confirmed but by the consumers that bought it? But I think everything is going to move in that direction where whether it's our generation or the next generation or the generation, you know, after them, will demand this, right, in some way, shape, or form, just to, you know, change the nature of consumerism.
Do you think that local products that are American made or locally made will also get that recognition, and that will be part of the consumer equation?
You know, I was just on a call this morning with a company that focuses on container shipping and how to find the greenest option around large shipments from overseas, but also large shipments inside the U.S. Proximity, I think, will help a great deal. I think made in the USA could mean something different in the future than it means today, right? It won't necessarily be about, you know, nationalism, right? It'll be about localism, right? Right. It's much more local to you. And I think there's real value. I mean, are we all going to want to get to farm to table, right, in everything that we do, which is such a return to the local merchant, right? Yeah. I think there could be something there. And I think, I think people could look at it and say, if I have to get something that is shipped 1,000 miles versus 500 miles, I might do the 500 miles.
Yeah, especially if they know it, right? They don't have any clue. You go on to Amazon, you order a product, you don't know where it's coming from, really.
That's right. I think as we expose more information to people, people will make more informed choices.
Right. Let's talk about, you spent quite a bit of time at Macy's, right?
Yeah.
And you were, I think you were an executive vice president of, I can't remember, product management, but also I loved it, the customer experience.
Yeah.
And what was happening in that time frame?
Yeah. So I joined Macy's in 2010 on the digital business side. And it was an agreement and it was a small business. It was a $700 million business of a $28 billion company at that point, or $25 billion company at that point. And there was a commitment that said, we're going to invest to become a very, very meaningful channel, but also take market share away from our competitors. And we're going to do that through smart technology investments, but also smart investments around customer experience. And because it said you can't leave the stores out of the conversation. They're part of it, right? Mm-hmm. As many people talked about, you know, you could start your journey on your phone. You could go into the store and look at the product, and you could end up, you know, buying on your computer at work. As long as you made that as seamless and easy as possible, people were constantly adopting it. And that's what we tried to do. We tried, and we got it wrong a lot of the time, right? But there were moments where we cracked through. And I'd like to think there were more moments that we cracked through than we didn't crack through, because, you know, when I started, it was a $700 million channel. When I left, it was a $7 billion channel. And so there was a 10x growth over an eight-year period that I give all the credit to the really smart people that I work with. But we had a problem that we needed to approach and a problem that we needed to solve.
What is the eighth notch? That seems to be another aspect of your career. And I think that's about shipping efficiency. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've kind of hinted at it ad nauseum throughout this call. It's where my passion is right now. I left the big operating roles a few years ago, and a buddy of mine tapped me on the shoulder and said, I got an idea for how to deliver e-commerce shipments in a more organized and synchronized fashion. But it's going to take some work to be able to do it. Right? He said, because I think it's too bad that there are, you know, five times that the delivery truck stops at your house every single week. I want to get it down to three. I want to get it down to two. Now, you can still buy all the things you want. I just want it to be more organized and synchronized. And that is where we started the work, which was, what would it mean to be able to look at either a cross retailer, or if I bought multiple items coming from different locations, what would it mean to be able to organize those deliveries to be delivered at the same time in the back of the truck to your doorstep at the same time? Big math problem, big AI problem that we've worked with, and a big carrier problem. Because what we found is that the carrier that we work with as a partner said, it's a problem that we've been trying to solve for a very long time. But there's large operational savings if we can find a way to take trucks off the road.
Right. Yeah, so in other words, you'd go online and you would buy, I just bought a screen door from Wayfair company. Maybe I buy a screen door, maybe I buy some bicycle shorts, maybe I buy something for the kids, all different companies. But the idea is that they would all be delivered at the same time.
Yep. Yeah. If they were being delivered, but by the same carrier. Right. So, you know, we do the work to understand everything that's coming to your address and then tell the retailer when to ship it to take advantage of things that are already in motion to you. And because the network is so effective and so predictive that those things will match up at the final sort hub, get onto the truck, and the driver can drop them off once.
Yeah. And would Amazon be part of that, or are they so focused on their own branding and having their own fleets in our neighborhoods that wouldn't?
They do this already. Yeah, they absolutely do this already on their own.
But they do it on their own for their own products.
And what we're attempting to do is bring that same capability to the rest of the retail industry. So giving that same competitive advantage that Amazon has, because they have the ability to go from having it at the warehouse to having their own fulfillment capability to having their own delivery capability, we're stitching it together from the retailer through the package carrier to the doorstep.
I saw a very interesting article once about container ships coming across the ocean. And that is another one of these sort of, to me, it's a nightmare. To you, it's probably a wonderful Rubik's Cube, sort of a puzzle that you work, that you relish working on. But how do you sort and how do you organize most efficiently, really?
Right? Yeah. It really is a question that when we started talking to people, they're like, it seems so simple, but we know it's very hard, right? And what it is you've got to get cooperation at the beginning of the journey to ensure that the coordination happens at the end of the journey.
Let's go back into the stores just for a second, because I had a question I wanted to ask you about self-checkout.
Sure.
And, you know, how does that play into the customer experience? Do some people like it, some people dislike it, or so you have to have both, or what's the read on an expert like you?
I think everybody thought it was the right thing to do because of the diminishing amount of store personnel. And you also wanted to give that person that just had a few things the ability to check out quickly. I think that we've seen the pushback that no matter what we do, it's still hard. It's still hard for people. I mean, I just did one at a grocery store 2 days ago, and it was very difficult. I did one at a Walmart, and it was super easy. Getting that experience right is really an important thing. And also making sure the person doesn't feel like they're stealing something, right? Which is what everybody worries about, is that they're going to get stopped by somebody as they walk out the door.
Right. I always stumble at the supermarket. You know, they always say, oh, come on, use the checkout, self-checkout. But how do you weigh vegetables and things like that? I mean, it just, to me, it's a...
Nine out of the 10 vegetables that I get don't have the sticker on them, and I end up in the conversation at checkout anyway. I think it works in certain metaphors. We tried it at Macy's. It was tried it with, you would just scan it with your phone, be able to pay on your phone and get a receipt on your phone and walk out. There were some customers that really liked it, and there were some customers that had an incredibly hard time.
Like you said, you almost feel like you're stealing, and at least other people don't know that you've already done that on your phone, and you're walking out the door, and everybody's looking at you. And
that's right.
It's an awkward time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's immediate gratification because I get to take the product, but I think a lot of people, I think that's why I don't mind scanning, I don't mind buying, but I want it sent to my home instead of me having to carry it out.
Yeah. So are you primarily focused on the eighth notch now? Is that your current?
It's my full-time job. I mean, I do board work for a publicly traded company. I do advisory work for a series of startups as well. But my full-time job is the eighth notch.
And how does a guy like you, maintain balance in life?
Scream into my pillow a lot. I don't know. I mean, I've gotten smarter as I've gotten older. Right? I'm a golfer, so I find my hobbies to be more frustrating than my work. I find work to be a respite from my hobbies in some cases. But if the pandemic taught us anything, balance is incredibly important. You got to find time for yourself, but you got to find time for the things that you love and you have a passion for.
Yeah, that's really true, isn't it? In order to be effective in this world of ours. How great. Is there anything that I've forgotten to ask you, or something that's on the tip of your tongue that you really want to make sure that we cover in this conversation?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only thing that I do want to add is that, you know, I am still a capitalist, and I wouldn't be doing this work as an eco warrior and doing sustainable fulfillment if there wasn't significant operational savings along. There's a dual bottom line that we offer, which is you do get operational savings and you do get sustainability savings. Yeah. It's incredibly rare that you can find something that gives you both. Yeah. That's what we're offering, and that's what keeps me intrigued by this, right? In terms of, I think I've found something that unlocks a problem that I always had as an operator in the retail space, that now as someone who services the retail space, fundamentally different than I saw anybody bring forward.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing this time together and enlightening me and our listeners about what you're doing in this retail space with sustainability. It's fascinating to me.
Ted, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.